This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
The goal of this podcast since day one is to provide the best information on the Vancouver real estate market at no cost to you, the listeners. To that end, we'd like to thank the following sponsors.
This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that's been around for nearly four decades. Marcon is not only committed to high-quality construction, but it also is making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland.
We want to highlight two incredible Marcon projects. Elmwood, a 38-story tower located at Burquitlam's most important intersection, Como Lake Avenue and Clark Road. This landmark tower will feature 335 condominiums, over 37,000 square feet of office and retail space, and almost 20,000 square feet of amenity space. Elmwood has been incredibly popular with 80% sold currently, but they still have a great selection of junior one-bedroom all the way to three-bedroom homes remaining. Check out marcon.ca/elmwood for more.
And Matt, we are also excited about Soane House, Marcon's newest community in West Coquitlam, with 165 homes ranging from junior one beds to three beds. Soane House offers the perfect West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced Nordic-inspired design. Register today at marcon.ca/soanehouse. That's S-O-E-N-H-A-U-S. Or you can learn more at marcon.ca or follow them at Instagram at Marcon Homes.
Marcon, building for life.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, today I brought my Hommer pants because it's Hommer time.
That's right. It's Hommer time. Sonny Homm is on the show, Director of Marketing and Strategy at Beedie Living. This was a phenomenal conversation.
I'm just realizing there probably are some millennials out there who don't know who MC Hommer is. And I'm a little, Sonny is probably closer to our age, I would think. So he makes the reference to himself.
Yeah. I think he definitely understands who Hommer is. I don't know if he's our age. Tall drink of water. He's on YouTube. Go check it out over there.
He looks younger, but we're pretty old looking for our age, specifically.
Anyway, Sonny Homm's on the show, Director of Marketing and Strategy at Beedie Living.
Yes.
This is a really interesting conversation. Goes in a number of ways that I was not expecting.
Right.
One of them was that he's a co-producing a documentary that's just coming out about hockey in North Korea, which was interesting.
Super interesting.
But more along the lines of talking about kind of the internal workings of Beedie, the market, how they're evaluating the market. It went in directions
and that, successful decisions that they've made.
Yeah.
And kind of where the company, where they see the future, where he sees the future of development companies, and then some really interesting market insights and some predictions. Sonny is not afraid to lay the hammer down when it comes to predictions.
That's right. So stay tuned for that.
Yeah. Okay. Enough of the references, though. We could do this all day. What else do we got before we cut to our interview with Sonny?
What else do we got this week? We got the Oakwin Tip. So
yes.
This is our new brokerage. Very excited to be at Oakwin Realty.
Yes.
Fantastic environment there.
Secret came with four potential jingles,
and we had to make a decision.
Secret's fired.
Secret will no longer be with the program.
Here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna just move forward with the Oakwin Tip. But you know, I was speaking to a listener the other day, and they said, you know, I love when you guys talk about the city, the pop culture, book references, that sort of thing. So what I'd like to do, at least today, and we'll see how it goes, but I'd like to hear the Oakwin Tip. Then I want your personal tip, and it can be anything.
Yeah, that seems like a good idea. I think you're also, just as a in life, yes, you're a guy with lots of recommendations.
I am.
You come up with a recommendation all the time. So I don't even know if it has to go back and forth. I think you're going to have a lot of recommendations. So
I have a lot of recommendations.
Yeah. But this is – so basically not thought out. We're just going to riff on a tip every week, and then we'll give you the well-thought-out one from Oakland Realty.
Yeah. Well, let's start with the Oakland tip.
Okay. So Oakland's tip this week, know your why,
right,
when you're buying. And what Oakland means by this, is it a principal residence or is it an investment property? Because if it's an investment property, you have to think about it entirely differently. I think this is something we cover on the show quite a bit.
We do.
Take all the emotion out. Either it fits with your real estate investment goals and provides the return you're looking for, or it doesn't. It's pretty cut and dried.
Yeah.
Whereas obviously, if your why is principal residence,
you're looking at it through a different lens.
Totally different
lens. But the reality is that you need to prep up front and understand exactly what you're going to be using this property for, right? And you need to also inform your agent of your why, because that will help the agent kind of clarify the process and help you make a sound decision in a market like ours.
And that's your Oakland tip.
That is your Oakland tip. And Matt, you have a personal tip.
I have a personal tip. This came up earlier today. I was with an Irish listener, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Dan. Shout out to Dan, nice, who may be listening.
Good crack.
He's good crack. I feel like there's a lot of Irish.
Listeners?
Connie McGinty.
Yeah.
Shout out to Connie. There's a lot of Irish guys. Anyway, The Irishman. It's out today on Netflix. This is the new Martin Scorsese. You've heard of this. It's about 3 hours long by the sounds of things.
Yeah.
It's the Jimmy Hoffa story.
Jimmy Hoffa story?
It is. It's the Jimmy Hoffa story as told by a guy who claims to have the inside track. It's got...
on the whereabouts of Jimmy Hoffa.
On the whereabouts, yeah. It's got Robert De Niro, Al Pacino.
Who else?
Joe Pesci.
Joe Pesci's back.
Oh, Secret makes an appearance.
Interestingly.
So keep going.
And I said to Dan, and maybe in preparation for this, but maybe not, I'm not sure why, I just finished Casino, a 1995 epic from Martin Scorsese last night. Definitely worth a revisit. So anyway, The Irishman's out today. If you don't have Netflix, it's worth a subscription, I would
Why'd
say.
You do that, Karen?
That's Goodfellas.
Oh, that's Goodfellas. Okay. So, what is Casino is?
Casino's Goodfellas in the desert. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's very good.
Yeah.
Gory, though. Gory.
Okay. Right.
So there you go. How'd that go?
That was I don't know if we'll be doing that segment again, but it was decent.
We also got Vancouver Real Estate Live.
We do.
This is our third live event. It's December 11th at 7 p.m. This is the holiday version.
Yes. And this is more for the person that doesn't listen to this show at the gym, or maybe you do listen to this show at the gym or while you're driving or wherever you are right now. We get it. You're probably not watching us. But for the live event, you actually come out, you hang out with us at your computer, you have a beer, you get to chat, you can ask questions. What do they call that? Ask me anything.
This was the thing. The last one we had Michael Yu on, it was a great one. We thought, okay, we're going to spend an hour talking about real estate disruption.
Yeah.
Turns out some people came up out with questions. We basically just chatted for an hour. It was amazing. Questions that kind of ran the gamut in terms of real estate. So,
we've almost stopped having like a topic now, right? Like, it's really just come and hang out and talk about real estate, because the conversation could go anywhere. We could talk about the market. We could talk about a specific property. We can talk about really anything that you're excited to talk about. That's what this is for. And a lot of basic information as well, like the evergreen stuff about
What I like about this too is first time home buyer questions, then first time investor questions to
high level investing.
High level stuff. And our guest on December 11th at 7 p.m. is unreal. Not going to be announced yet, but you'll want to come out. YouTube Live, going to be a great event.
BYOE eggnog.
That's right.
And it's the holiday edition as well. So,
the holiday edition.
Bring your holiday cheer.
Bring your holiday cheer. It's also going to be live at the Bento Box, another sponsor of ours.
Yes.
Bento Box has these shows like Best Thing Ever. It's what the best foods in Vancouver. All December, they do taste tests. All December, they're doing just holiday programming.
And they're rating.
We're doing, I think, Vancouver Real Estate Live's on the Bento Box channel.
Yep.
We're doing another one, I think. So it's,
Yeah, and really, if you are looking for different things you should try this holiday season
in Vancouver,
why not check out Best Thing Ever?
Yeah.
It really is great.
Well, yeah, and Bento Box is a future. There's no denying that.
Yeah.
And last but not least, before Hammer Time, we have Vancouverism, Larry Beasley's signed book. We're giving one away after the interview, so stay tuned for that.
Right.
These Google reviews, they just don't quit, and neither does Vancouverism. So,
yeah.
But let's cut to this interview. It's a good one.
Yeah, this interview is too legit to quit. Okay, so we're here with Sunny Hom, Director, Marketing, and Strategy at BD Construction. How are you doing, Sunny?
Doing great, especially after that type of introduction. Holy smokes.
I should say it's Hammer Time. How long did it take me to bring that up?
Hey, anytime it's Hammer Time, we're on. Yeah, my A game's here.
That's your office nickname.
It's transitioned to my office nickname. Started an indoor rowing studio, but we'll save that story for later, maybe off camera.
That's for the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast at Night version.
Yeah, exactly. So Sunny, first of all, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. As you can tell by my last name, Hom, or maybe you can't, my background's Korean. So Korean-Canadian, immigrated here when I was 3 years old with my family. Grew up in Maple Ridge, Port Coquitlam. Since then, kind of went to school locally here at UBC, studied Bachelor's of Commerce, and I've just fell in love with the city that we grew up in. So all of my family, friends are primarily based here. A lot of my relatives are still overseas in Korea, so I do make trips back and forth. But Vancouver's home. Outside of the real estate world, I like to spend time. I spent a lot of time on the water. I was an ex-Canadian national dragon boat athlete.
Really?
Yeah.
Holy. No big whoop?
Hey, it's no big book, but I also competed against, you know, every other genre of age classes and I'm all kidding aside, dragon boat and spending water in Vancouver is such a fortunate opportunity just to get outdoors, right? So
dragon boat is it's a boat.
Yeah, it's a boat. It's just,
for our listeners at home.
Yeah. For the sophisticated Scalina brothers. What is a boat?
So it's 20 seats in a canoe.
Right.
With a drums person and a steersman.
Right. Like you'll see it on the back. Exactly. False Creek, right? Yeah. But it's, man, you have to have a lot of strength.
Yeah. It's fascinating once you kind of get into the sport, how technical, you know, at the competitive level you get. Like your middle seat operates completely different than your front seat and your back seat. But interesting fact about the sport of dragon boat, Vancouver actually has the largest dragon boat community in North America. And that was born in the 1986 Vancouver Expo, when I believe it was a Chinese part, or the expo there that they showcased was the sport of dragon boat. So that was their contribution to the expo. And since then, since 86, it's been a massive sport, as you can see on the False Creek area.
Yeah.
That always, you know, you see people ripping up and down that creek. So yeah, it has a huge tie to the Vancouver Expo and kind of like the modern recent sort of history and, you know, Vancouver recreational activities.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of recreational activities, before we get to real estate here, Sunny, you also recently directed a movie.
I definitely not directed. Directed by Nigel Edwards, a close friend.
Oh, okay.
But co-produced with a team of talented individuals. So the documentary that we co-produced and made, we spent close to 3 years in North Korea tracking the lives and the lifestyle and the culture of North Korean ice hockey players. So we spent, I think it was close to five trips.
How, not to get too far off, but how did that come about to look into that?
Yeah.
That seems like a super interesting thing to look at, but how?
Absolutely. Any time that you involve sports in general, I think it kind of breaks down barriers or any kind of political differences, cultural differences. So that's where we wanted to focus our conversation is, you know, everything that you see on documentaries in North Korea, especially the stuff that we see here outside of in the Western world, it's always been about politics. You know, what is Kim Jong-un up to these days? How many nuclear missiles have they fired off? But what we wanted to do was actually really engage and do an expose on the human side of the North Korean story. So, you know, beneath all the layers of the politics, like, what does one individual that lives in Korea actually think? You know, what's their day-to-day life like? How do they interact with their friends from a social level?
And so you were looking at really good hockey players, though, in North Korea.
Exactly. So we had the opportunity through the Ice Hockey Federation, the North Korean Ice Hockey Federation, where we had a contact there where, you know, ice hockey was, at the time when we started doing the sport, it became a focus on the Korean Peninsula just with the 2018 PyeongChang Olympics coming up.
Yeah.
And we submitted a proposal to follow an ice hockey team, which, and you know, relatively in North Korea, it's a very, very small sport. So it gave us a pretty, a good opportunity to kind of have an inroad where we could have a direct access to a very elite level of players.
Right.
Whereas if it was soccer or basketball, you had to go through a few more bureaucratic sort of levels. Huh. So yeah, ice hockey was a small sport in North Korea that allowed us to get a huge sampling or a huge perspective on what life is there.
Yeah.
Wow.
So last question, and I'm guessing from that last answer that it's really about kind of, hey, we're all human, but what was the strangest, because were you in North Korea?
Yeah. I've been there close to six times now.
What was the strangest kind of thing about North Korea or about the hockey players or about how anything in relation to the movie?
In relation to the movie? Ooh, that's a tough question, but a good one.
It's a loaded question too. Yeah. Why are you assuming it's strange?
No. What's different, right? No, absolutely. Yeah,
different, not strange. Yeah, strange is not.
Yeah.
Abnormal maybe. No, just joking.
I would say the biggest learning or takeaway was the fact that you know, like they're not all that different. You know, the way that they tie their skates, step onto the ice, and their goals of, you know, scoring a goal and winning a game is no different than a Canadian ice hockey player. Like I thought, you know, the wildest experience would be going there and really trying to understand why they're playing ice hockey at an elite level. Like, I mean, they're not going to be making it to the Olympics anytime soon.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But like, what is their motivation and incentive? So, I thought, you know, a lot of the conversations leading up to it was, oh, are they, you know, handpicked and forced to play ice hockey? Are they kind of put to the, you know,
like the Red Army?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But in fact, like, it's absolutely not the case. It's, you know, they have every choice and really in an ironic way, freedom to elect the sport that they want to focus on, to go through it as an amateur professional athlete, and the country sort of takes care of their players. But the biggest takeaway for me was their passion and their determination to win is no different. The reason why, you know, a lot of Canadian athletes go through the ringer of, you know, becoming a professional or semi-pro athlete.
Right.
You know, it's through their dedication, their passion, just like their human spirit to like just do better every single day. So,
yeah.
So that was actually a learning curve for us as a takeaway, but strange things. I mean, yeah, there's no doubt there's some strange things when you go there. Everything's foreign to them and to us, right? So like we're cross-pollinating such a different set of cultures.
That, right.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, a lot of interesting process getting into the country.
There would be, but one of our team members, who's one of the co-producers, he's been there over 60 times. And a quick shout out to him. His name's Matt Reichel, and he owns a cultural exchange company where he engages different countries around the world through bridging sort of gaps like this. So he spends a lot of time in North Korea, Yemen, Afghanistan, and the company is called Nersha Network. But so through him, we're able to sort of bypass and get through some of the
bureaucratic
hurdles. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, so it sounds like you're a guy who wears many hats, but your main gig is at BD Construction. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and about the company you work for?
Yeah, absolutely. So we formally go by BD. So BD, it was normally, or formerly back in the day, BD Development Group. but now we've sort of amalgamated under one sort of brand, BD. And the group of divisions that we have is BD Industrial, BD Living, which focuses on the residential side, BD Construction, and our BD Capital division. And most recently, last year, Ryan Beatty and the Beatty family launched a program where he pledged $50 million to start up a fund where they would help students that had promising futures, or they had strong apt to excel in life, but they just didn't have all the different fortunate set of opportunities to have equal rights or equal opportunities to get out there, to enroll in a post-secondary education. So that's called BD Luminaries. So there's really five divisions that operate under BD. But the side that I'm most focused on is BD Living on the residential multifamily side.
Right.
Okay.
And why real estate?
Yeah, it's... I would say, why not? I was studying, going into specializing in marketing and international business. So I studied abroad in Singapore and South Korea. And while living there, it just opened my eyes to the potentials around placemaking, potentials around really like these mega structures that were going up. I was like, holy shoot, like this is incredible. And I came back here, and as soon as I came back, my first term back in my fourth year, I stepped into one of my mentors at the time. His name was Mark Monroe. He was a real estate prof at UBC. He helped me kind of guide he guided me with some questions and said, hey, you have a marketing background, you have an interest in real estate, so where do you think you could help me to try to at least have an introductory sort of exploration. How do I explore into the real estate side? So you literally at the time, it wasn't even called the Condo Guide or the New Home Condo Guide. It was the magazine. And it was very thin at the time. And, it wasn't even Magnum. It was still Platinum. And there's Mac. And I think Rennie was there. But he pointed at the bottom right corner and he said, well, these are the companies that you should start looking into. These are real estate marketing firms that specializes in project marketing. So you have a technical background with your marketing background. This is the development side. So that's how I got introduced. And since then, every single day, it's something that's, a topic of conversation, no matter if I'm around the family dinner table with family or friends, real estate is involved in every, facet in our life, whether you need a place to live, to work or play. And I love being a part of that conversation, whether it's for on the residential side or the retail, or the commercial. Yeah.
Can you walk us through maybe a day in the life of the director of marketing and strategy at BD?
Day in a life. I don't think there is one, like a strict regiment or schedule. But if I think that's one of the reasons why I love my job and a lot of my colleagues and professionally in our industry, and especially on the development side, why we love our jobs, because your day-to-day changes every single day. Some days you're working closely with the interior designers. Some days you're working very closely with the architects. Others you're sitting around the boardroom table with the most creative designers, in our city. So there's not a strict sort of regiment or schedule, but if I were to, if someone was to ask, where do you spend most of your efforts and where do you think your value add as a company and your position, where are you applying most of your concerted efforts towards? It's certainly around to the consumer side, how do we best position our product so it meets consumer designs? So that's related to making sure that our floor plans are well thought through, that our interior design and features and spec is, it matches or at least succeed or surpasses the market expectations. Another instances with creative designers, my job will be to strategize how do we best position our story to convey the right message to the end users or the investors. So that definitely didn't answer your question.
No. That
actually sounds...
Yeah.
I think that answered it very well.
And what, like, where do you guys draw the inspiration? Like, say for floor plans, for example, is it based on past projects and sales, like what sold well, or is it based on buyer feedback? Like, where do you guys go? Like, where do you draw your inspiration from when you're designing a project?
I I'll take that question and take it one step back. Anytime that, you know, I encourage anyone that I meet, and, you know, I love traveling. I really enjoy getting outside of Vancouver and seeing what else is out there. And specifically, when I travel to other destination or cities in North America, I find it, you know, always through and through coming back fascinating to see how sophisticated our development industry is. And so when I relating that to your question, you know, we rely on the sophistication of our industry, the savviness of our consumers now that are probably the most sophisticated purchasers across the board in any markets.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Our sales and marketing consultants, such as Rennie or MLA Canada, they've, you know, now collectively probably have, you know, close to 50, 40 years of experiences working with directly with consumers. So we rely heavily on consumer information through their sales and marketing teams. You know, the other guys such as Urban Analytics, right. You know, John and Michael, the guys that were on your show before, like they provide incredible insights and data points. And no other cities really have, I think, a collection of very sophisticated consultants and a group of professionals in the multifamily side than Vancouver does. So, mm-hmm. you know, we'd be foolish to say that it's all based on our own internal efforts. And we rely heavily on our own internal resources, but we also look outside of our teams and rely on our consultants such as architects, interior designers, sales and marketing companies, the data providers to really amalgamate that information. And it's our job to interpret that to be able to then turn that around and design hopefully what we think is a very marketable product to the marketplace.
Right. That's an interesting point. Like that there's consultant jobs in Vancouver that exist here that don't exist elsewhere.
Like they've actually been just created out of nothing.
Yeah. We're working with, for example, there's one consultant, I believe they, you know, it was just referenced internally at one of our meetings called Plan X, and their job is to literally squeeze out every set of efficiencies in our building. So after the architects have gone through, they would get hired on as a consultant, and somehow miraculously they would find maybe two or three parking stalls, you know, to increase that sort of efficiency for us. So
wow. So they review the building,
just do a general audit of the building and say,
exactly, this is where we could find a little bit more. Yeah. Exactly. So there's incredibly niche consultancy sort of professions in our city that I find that I don't think you'll be able to find in most other sort of submarkets or other greater markets across North America.
Right. No, that's fascinating. And so I guess, is that, would you say the fact of how multifaceted your day-to-day is that kind of what's most exciting about being in the industry?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the most exciting part is, you know, our industry is it's not only such a large part of Vancouver now, but it also is such a large contributor back to our communities as well. So on a day-to-day basis, like the reason why I get up for work and I'm super excited is, you know, that you're working on a plan, a set of drawings right now, and in 2 years from now, that project will launch for pre-sales. And in 5 years from now, that project will be completed and the keys will be handed over. And every time you drive down that road and you see that building now, 5 years from now that you're looking at these drawings, you'll know that you'll have some level of contribution towards the community that you live in.
Creating a community.
Creating community, creating housing opportunities.
Right.
So I think that's the most fascinating part about, you know, the work that we do.
Yeah. No, that's true. And are you interested, like, do you follow the market as an investor personally? Like, are you interested in real estate as part of your own investment portfolio?
I think we all, in a weird way, you know, as a dweller or someone that lives in the city, you know, subconsciously or consciously, everyone's tracking the market somehow. You
know? Yeah.
Everyone has an opinion whether the housing's too expensive or too cheap, yeah, or if it's the right time to buy. But yeah, naturally for myself, even personally and professionally, it's always been a topic that I've been interested in. So I track it very, very closely. Yeah.
Right. But I mean, and that makes sense from being in the development. I feel like if you're in the real estate industry in Vancouver, it's almost like there's a default setting that you're the type of person that really is positive and positive about the city. But as somebody who's actually involved in building the community. I mean, it makes sense that people in the development industry are bullish on the city in general and excited about its future, right? Like that's what you're literally doing all day is creating the future of the city.
Absolutely. And what's not to be bullish about Vancouver, really? You know, one of the questions that I always ask myself and others is any time that I've traveled out and come back to the city, there's a deeper level of appreciation for the place that we live in and we call home. You know, it's, you know, look outside, even on a late November day, it's, you know, temperature isn't below freezing. Still could see the mountains in the distance. You could go skiing and hop on a surfboard all within one day. And there's no other places around the world that offers what Vancouver is. So as a community, as a profession, as an industry, I think collectively we all should be very proud and excited for the city that we live in.
So maybe switching gears a little bit, it sounds like you track the market pretty closely. We've talked since about late last year, we did a seminar on this, but kind of pre-sale, resale, you know, and at each moment, the dynamics of whether pre-sales make sense, I think, changes, right? We're in a moment right now where we're having a very busy November. We're coming to the end of November, but the sales are up, inventory's down. Would you buy a pre-sale right now? Like, does a pre-sale make sense for you, either as an end user or an investor?
I think the short answer is yes. I think, but you got to be there's smart buys out there right now. Relative to the marketplace back in 2016, 2017, where everyone was just flocking into the pre-sale market,
right.
You know, the market has changed drastically. I would say to your point, like resales are more active. The sales activity right now is more active than it was last year. I don't know, you guys probably have the stats overgrown by, you know, growth of 40%
or so.
On the pre-sale side, we haven't seen that type of growth or buoyancy, but, you know, everyone kind of generalizes the market being it's dead right now. Pre-sales is absolutely not dead. It's not rocket hot as it was in 2016 or 2017, nor do we want it ever to be that hyperactive. but it's absolutely buoyant right now. You know, we just launched a project back in June of 2019 called Storia, and it's a boutique building, 39 homes in Burnaby Heights. Very much an end user product where our average size of our home was 1,100 square feet. Wow. And we sold through, 80% of our homes there within 2.5 weeks. So if you design the right product for the right end user right now, even at a pre-sale state, I think there's absolutely the right opportunities and the right purchase decisions. You know, and since then, that project has escalated and appreciated in prices. And I don't think that's a common story in today's market for the pre-sale world.
Right.
But there's signs of life absolutely out there in the right pockets. I think Fraser Valley is another one that hasn't really seen a slowdown, even from a pre-sale state.
Right,
Prices are still staying very buoyant. They're not escalating like it was before, but it's all about finding what makes sense for you as an investor or as an end user and making sure that you're not just blindly walking into a pre-sale project right now.
And I guess as a developer, you kind of have to pivot and interpret the market and what to build and where the market really is, right? I mean, that's what you're kind of constantly doing as you go through different markets.
Absolutely. And BD as a corporate sort of culture, and especially on the residential side, we've always geared towards the end user in mind. Even, you know, in the hottest times in the marketplaces, we would envision a project where floor plans aren't micro suites. They're, you know, livable suites that you as an investor could even imagine yourself living in. Mm-hmm. And even from a quality of spec and feature, we're not looking for value engineering exercises throughout our building where we understand that the market's, sort of going through a reset. the end users are certainly the types that are out there. And, again, the proof of concept showcased at Storia, where instead of pulling back our interior features, we actually went forward and said, we're going to deliver, instead of stainless steel appliances, we're putting in integrated appliance packages. Instead of going smaller on our units, we're actually going to go larger on our homes, because we saw a demand, or at least a market opportunity there. The same goes for, we have a project called The Heights on Austin in Coquitlam, and that's very much an end user driven product as well. So right. We've been very patient with our purchasers, our realtors, our sales are steady, but we're exactly where we believe we need to be right now. And we've seen this market before, back in 2011, back in 2013, 2014. So I think the more experienced developers or the community builders in our city recognizes that right now. And really they're trying to build and design for a product that's going to be end user focused.
Yeah, I think the danger, and we talk about it on this show all the time, the danger of making blanket statements about the market in general. Like a lot of people say, well, the market is soft. Yeah. It's like, well, what does that mean, really? I mean, if you go down to sub-markets, there's areas with a lot of activity. If you go down to product type, certain products are moving really quickly. And then also, if you know, the tier, we talk about like the tier one and the tier two type properties where higher level finishes and everything else. And I guess it's up to the developer to figure out what to build and where to build, but it's also up to, I think the agent or whoever's advising you on the market to advise you where there is activity. Because, I mean, if you go into a product like Storia and you think that you're going to get a ton of incentives and mm-hmm. meanwhile they're selling, you know, you might be surprised, right, as the end user, potential purchaser.
Yeah, that's absolutely, and we're seeing that across the board where some projects, and it's not, equal or weighted all the same, you know, in the same submarket, you might have one site or one project offering, you know, X incentive and the other offering nothing.
Yeah, right.
And it's all, I think, you know, to your point, I think you hit it right on. I think the biggest focus, if you are purchasing a pre-sale opportunity right now, and the advice is, this is the same advice I give my friends and my family, it's, you know, really, truly understand who you're buying from. Do your homework. It is a longer sort of process to get your keys in hand. So I think more important than before and ever, you know, one, get pre-qualified, understand what your sort of financial arrangements could look like even 2-3 years down the road. Two is, you know, understand who you're buying from, who the builder is, and what type of reputable development sort of background and history and what their relationships look like with even the construction companies. Because a lot of the times, you know, it's one thing to launch a project and successfully sort of sell or hit a pre-sale target at certain mm-hmm. revenue. But the other weight of success is based on delivery of that home. And some of the potential challenges that some builders might have is actually being able to deliver that home in the shape or form that you actually purchased in, or at least, you know,
like, you're expecting
to manage, right? Expectations. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It's like the Instagram photo versus the real life, from the marketing material. Yeah. You know, it's funny though, like we were talking about this the other day also, like you can execute on as a developer, as a marketing company as well. You know, from the actual marketing, from all the different sales phases, right up to handing over keys. I mean, you have to, there's so many different areas to be good at, right, as a developer.
Right.
And so, I mean, yeah, you can see how complicated that would get.
Absolutely. And where we focus most of our efforts, or where I think growingly a lot of, the reputable developers that plan to, you know, that either have already existed in our marketplace for a long time and built a brand equity around it, and that plans on being here for the next decades onwards, they absolutely will need to focus more so on their customer service and the home completion side,
right,
and the construction efforts, because your sale is only as good as your last impression. So totally. If your last impression,
it's actually kind of amazing how many
dropped the ball.
Developers dropped the ball at that stage.
A lot of small to mid-sized developers. Yeah, really, and
even
the
a
ball.
Couple of big ones where you're like, man, this deficiency walkthrough could not have went worse.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, like, you know, and a lot of the times it's you know, there's constraints and challenges, and so yeah. I truly believe that the majority of even mid-sized, smaller, large developers, builders in our city, truly have the full intention, and also they have all the intentions to deliver the home and the quality that they envisioned in.
Sure.
But along the way, you know, they're also challenged with their subcontractors, their trades,
materials,
you know,
everything, right?
Yeah,
they're getting labor costs and everything.
Exactly,
else, right?
Labor costs. They're getting pressures from their financial partners to make sure that the returns are exactly what, you know,
they perform it at.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think it's a very complex discussion. And also a topic that's always reoccurring, I'm sure, at many offices around the city.
Right.
But, you know, as an industry right now, I think it's more important than ever before, where especially for the pre-sale side, where the expectations are high. We need to deliver high quality homes to our purchasers. And speaking back to the incentives, you know, there's projects that are offering great incentives out there, but the way that I see like deals or value is in two form. One is the short term values. So what, you know, are you getting $10,000 off or $20,000 off right now? And the other is the long term values. So who are you buying from, and how would your home appreciate in value in 5-10 years time from now?
Right.
If you're looking to even resale, if you're purchasing as an end user or an investor, in 5 or 10 years from now, how will that building take form, and what is the quality that's going to be delivered to you at the time of possession, so that when you do look to resell it down the road after a number of years, how would that building sort of, you know, hold in terms of that retainment value?
That's a huge thing. And it's funny because we hear always on the resale side, even 10, 15 years later, even sometimes like 25 years later, people say, oh, this is a whatever developer building.
Yes.
Right?
Exactly.
And then everyone gets excited about it and goes,
it's '90s.
Yeah, late 90s. But they're like, oh, right? It must be, you know, good construction or good whatever, right?
Absolutely.
And that's great. And in a city, especially in a market like Vancouver, where we are at such a high level in the development community, like you can see how the brand and the quality and the customer service would help you weather a downturn in the market much better than more like the fly by night.
And there's a tremendous flight to brand right now.
Even
at a consumer level, they're asking the right questions more and more as we're seeing traffic come through. We did a customer survey both at our project at the Heights on Austin and Storia, and the top two reasons was location and developer's reputation, and the reason for their purchase. And we see that. So we see that at a consumer level. We also see that at a partnership level. So a lot of financial partners will look to bring on coveted sort of developers that have a brand equity in the city, that also knows how to manage your construction process as well. And that's an enormous factor that we're seeing more and more these days. So absolutely, I think brand and the focus around our brand, and I think especially the efforts that we're as on the marketing side, you know, we're probably more focused on our brand than ever before to make sure. And when I say brand, we're not just throwing advertisements or promotions out there, but we're truly involved in trying to integrate ourselves with our community. So as I mentioned, you know, Ryan Beatty, he's been an investor, but also a contributor to our community in our backyard for years now. So the Beatty School of Business, that was the largest endowment that the Beatty family has contributed towards a secondary school. You know, we got the Beatty Luminators program now. Collectively as a company, we get emails week in, week out on volunteer opportunities that we have with our partnered organizations. So I think brand, when I say brand, it's not just on the delivery of the homes, but just really how a company would act as a social or corporate citizen in our community.
Well, it's nice. And it makes me just think about a slowdown generally, how it kind of clarifies things, right? And I think it happened in our industry where like on the resale side, just who's adding value and kind of the cream rises to the top when it's not going gangbusters. And it's kind of the same thing, right? Like there's enough time to kind of step back and think kind of broader about the vision and the strategy. And I think it's always a good thing for sure. This is kind of a strange question, but I was just thinking when you mentioned Storia, like, so in this slowdown, presumably the end user or the downsizer is looking at Storia, right? Larger homes, really nice finishes. Can you talk, I don't know how involved you were, but can you talk a little bit about kind of that decision-making process where you say, okay, we're going to make the homes bigger. We're going to double down on kind of integrated appliances. Like, presumably you're consulting different data sets and consultants to do that. But the amount of pressure to make the right call in those boardrooms, like, it's funny, before we went live, Adam was saying he dropped off a deposit to
at an
unnamed developer where developer. It's like in the distance you can see three guys sweating in a boardroom or at least thinking very hard about some question. But can you talk about kind of the pressure of those situations and how those calls actually get made?
Yeah. You know, as my boss would say, you know, you know, out of 10 decisions that you make, 7 will be right and 3 are wrong. And that's, you know, that's just the probabilities of, you know, there's no exact science, you know, behind what will be proven right. All we could do is, as I mentioned earlier in our conversation, is, you know, utilize and leverage our partners and consultants' information and their insights. They have their pulse in the market. We also have our pulse in the market. So through conversations with smart guys like yourselves, we're trying to just always interpret what the best mm-hmm. decision is. But if I recall using Story as an example, we had 2 critical decisions that impacted the cost. But on a marketing and sales and also a development side, I think 2 really important and successful decisions that we made when we look back on it. One was this decision to go another half parkade deeper to offer a second parking stall to those large penthouse users. So, yep. You know, if we're selling a condominium at, you know, $1 million, $1.2 million, there's a certain level of expectation that comes with it, right?
Sure.
So the debate, the back and forth was, well, that additional parkade level will cost us X. Do you think we'll be able to see that back? And sometimes the question or the answer is that it's not a matter of will we see that back. In most cases, we try to monetize what that sort of impact will be on the performance. So do you think we could see a $10 of a premium to kind of put that so we could offset the cost?
Right.
But decision there was, no, we believe that this will be a binary decision. If we don't offer 2 parking stalls for some of these units, mm-hmm. We will lose those purchasers.
Right.
We might not get even those homes to move at those prices. And the same thing with our second critical decision was around an air conditioning unit. So most of the product or over half of the product or competitors out in the Burnaby Heights area did not offer air conditioning. Again, a substantial cost to us. But in this day and age, especially for wood frame building, low rise downsizers that are end users that are looking at, you know, they're coming from large single family homes. One of their biggest objections is how warm is our apartment going to be,
right.
Especially when it's south facing in the summertime. So I think it's a matter of just having insightful conversations with the partners that we have, the sales and marketing teams. It's also another, you know, really understanding our numbers on the construction side. So continuously doing value engineering exercises mm-hmm. to make sure that we're making decisions that are smart and effective, not blind saying, hey, let's just throw in everything and hope we get a return.
Yeah.
It's about making critical decisions based on just all the different sort of touch points that we have with our trades and our consultants.
Right. That's fantastic. So Sonny, just kind of maybe shifting a little bit more, kind of pulling back and looking at kind of all the areas in Vancouver, do you have like a general area or sub area that you're really excited about right now?
I have 2 in particular, but one being, you know, it might come across being biased, but I truly do believe, we believe in the Coquitlam submarket. Coquitlam in general has seen tremendous growth, probably less so than Burnaby has in Metrotown or Brentwood areas. But that's the reason why I think there's so much potential and opportunity there, mm-hmm. where when you think about affordability and housing sort of migration trends, you know, investors, you know, tenants, everyone's looking going from west to east right now. So as Burnaby has, you know, skyrocketed in price points from, I think it was, you know, 4 years ago around $850 a foot to close to $1,100 now. And as Brentwood has shifted from $680 to $1,050 a foot, and as Lougheed Town Center has gone from $750 to $975 or $1,000.
Right.
So point that I'm making is there's been so much drastic appreciation in some of the prices just west of Coquitlam. When you look at Coquitlam, there hasn't been as many high-rise density, and now it's coming online with a lot of this the Coquitlam revitalization with the mm-hmm. Evergreen Line. But looking just even further east of that, where the Austin Heights area is, you have your 5 minute distance to three SkyTrain stations. You're next to over 750 acres of park spaces within a 4 kilometer radius. You have a 90,000 square foot community center that's a skating rink and an aquatic center called Poirier. You're in the middle of a revitalization again at the Austin Heights. So when we came out with the Heights on, or the Austin back in 2011, that was the first high-rise 19-story building that we launched. Since then, City of Coquitlam has put a moratorium on it. And with the Heights on Austin, when we launched last year, it was the first project to be back out to the marketplace since they've lifted that moratorium. So if you look at the Austin Heights area, it's no different than what Coquitlam was 4 years ago. It's going to go through a revitalization.
Right.
And albeit it's not directly on transit, some end users and investors don't want to be necessarily directly on transit around the chaos of everything that's going to take place. So mm-hmm. it's a very residential, a very friendly neighborhood to raise your family. It's close enough to the main transit nodes, Lougheed Town Center, which is a 5 minute drive down the road. And for many people, they'll be able to enjoy park spaces. It's a truly like a residential neighborhood that right. you get to enjoy.
And what's the second one you're most excited about?
The second one, it's outside of Metro Vancouver, and we don't necessarily have opportunities there, but Squamish.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. If you look at the median age of migration patterns there, you know, over 62 or 63% are under the age of 38
it's
years
young.
Old.
It's young. You feel young that when family. You're there.
Totally.
It's crazy. Yeah,
totally.
Absolutely. And it's only from North Vancouver, your 35, 40 minute drive. So either you're making that decision to drive out up to Squamish from Metro Vancouver, or you're moving out to Langley at that same sort of equidistance
right.
in terms of time and commute time. And I mean, if you were to ask me, I'm picking Squamish all day long over Langley, just based on the natural amenities and the outdoor recreational
sure.
amenities.
It's nice to drive too.
Yeah.
But it's, and potentially the biggest local mountain coming.
Yes, absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
There's such a good feeling in Squamish. I don't know. Every time I'm there, I'm like, man, I could.
It's a great feeling. Yeah. And similar to, And
it's just groovier out there, you know?
This is going back to your
and puka shells. You're more Dave Matthews out there. Yeah?
And
there's a throwback.
The one other submarket in Metro Vancouver is actually Port Moody. Port Moody has become, you know, it's been relatively sleepy. It's a sleepy bedroom community for many years. You know, not much has changed there, but you know, if you follow retail trends and infrastructure trends, the SkyTrain node's already out there. You know, you have all the best microbreweries in Metro Vancouver. All,
Yellow Dog.
Yeah, Yellow Dog, exactly.
That alone.
I should have led with that.
Yeah,
and also a SkyTrain.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Yellow Dog
yeah.
node.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, there's a lot. That's it's. We got a... friend of the show on talking about craft breweries not long ago and how they're kind of reshaping communities, and it's incredible.
Specifically with moms on maternity leave.
Yeah.
He said it's the new thing is the stroller parking outside of the microbreweries.
Right.
Is a big thing. But no, that's funny. No, yeah, I agree with you. With Squamish and Port Moody seem like no-brainers for sure. Mm-hmm. And they both have that very much that kind of that family. Like, it sounds to me like you're kind of targeting in areas that provide the infrastructure for young families and community building. And I think it's interesting because that's part of the thing that Matt was saying is that, you know, when you see a downturn, you kind of see what really resonates and what really matters in a market and in a city. And what we saw here is we saw end users, active end users, and we also have seen over the last 2 years areas with really strong communities outperform areas where people felt like communities didn't exist, right? And I think that really ties in. It should tie into anybody's investment portfolio, like for the looking at the future of a neighborhood, I think.
Absolutely. And you got to think, you know, if you're investing, even looking at it from an investor standpoint, you're thinking at how are you going to get your top dollar or at least a competitive lease rate? And you got to think as a tenant, as, you know, if you were to live there and if you're younger, generally tenants, you know, and again, this is an exact stat, but for the most part, you know, if you're looking at a renter, they might be typically a little bit younger as well. Like, what are some of the trends that they're looking for that they're willing to pay an additional $25 or $50 a month just to be in that location?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Almost look for the, not necessarily the best deal, but the best value, right? Is the kind of idea there. And I think, yeah, I mean, it seems this downturn, going back to what you said, if it's proven anything, it's proven that the value,
the security of the local market, I think, and the security of people that are buying and selling real estate, not so much as a hobby, but as
trading like stocks or something but actually, you know, making choices about the way they want to live their lives, right?
Yeah, and even from a product, like if we're diving into a sub market and a sub product type. You know, I've been sort of analyzing the Grandview Woodlands area for the past couple of months, and especially looking at some of the duplex sites or the listings that come online. If it's priced well, which is under $1.5 million, and it's relatively new, good design on it, it's flying off right now within a week, 2 weeks.
Is
Grandview?
Yeah, this will be.
Well, Matt, now here comes a bunch of selfish questions about Matt's redevelopment potential here. Wait for it.
I know it's all my questions are block specific. Yeah. But are you just watching that? Is it from a kind of personal standpoint or just interest in? Because you're looking at newer duplexes, if I understand, the new stuff that's hitting.
Yeah, just out of interest and personal note as well. Just again, just tracking, where trends are shifting towards for younger families. Mm-hmm. You know. Mm-hmm. Maybe, 10 years ago, the shift in focus was around the West Side addresses because it has great school catchments. But unfortunately, now at some of the prices that the West Side, even townhome offers, you're as a young family, you're kind of limited in choice and the space that you have. So I think when you look at affordability factors as well as socially and culturally, where do you want to hang out?
Because that's not to cut you off, but that seems like the interesting thing that's happening right now is I was just talking to a guy who owns a half duplex in Kits, and he was looking at stuff in Grandview, and he's like, wait, this doesn't make sense. We're too close. This makes no sense to me at all. But the move east happened, I think, in part because of affordability at the start, and now it's kind of just become the community that people want to be in, right? And it's kind of hollowed out a lot of those communities in the West Side in a way. It might be too strong of a word, definitely not Kits, but hollowed out certain communities where people just aren't keen to be there. But then the weird thing right now is like something in my neighborhood.
The gap doesn't exist anymore.
Something in my neighborhood, almost the same square footage and same age, and something in Kits, you're like, there's not. Yeah,
not
it's
a
like
huge
almost
margin.
Almost the same.
And one's like a few blocks from the beach. Right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And on a multifamily level, you're seeing that even between Metrotown and Brentwood. Whereas, even up to 2 years ago, you would find that Metrotown saw $150 to $200 of a premium over Brentwood. But now with everything that's happening with the amazing Brentwood location and that sort of coming to life, the gap's diminishing and it's closing in. And I think, again, going back to, like, you got to think, where are the retail trends and, like, where do you want to be and hang out?
Yeah.
Right. And if Metrotown is, or Brentwood is becoming more and more equal to that of Metrotown, the gap's, I believe, going to naturally close in. No different than why I think a half duplex or a duplex site in East Van is trading at, you know, not maybe exact, but closer numbers or closer gaps to what West Side homes are trading at.
Yeah.
And, you know, a large part of that is, as a young family, you look at school catchments, but, you know, you're looking at the median household income in East Vancouver has come up drastically as well over the years just by that migration pattern happening.
Totally.
So in turn, schools, the teaching, the education,
everything is improving.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's funny too, because I think even if you have the budget for the West Side, people often make decisions by where their people are too, right? Their friends, where family are and everything else. And so, I mean, even if you have that budget that you could go to the West Side, often people are thinking, well, I want to be in maybe an area like Grandview because that's where friends from my age group or socioeconomic, you know, area or whatever, that's where they're buying, right?
That's
you want to be close to your friends.
And that's where I think townhomes specifically in Langley and the Fraser Valley has really hasn't been all that impacted because, you know, as you, rightfully you just pointed out, if all of your friends are living out in Langley now based on affordability or their lifestyle, you're the only one living in Vancouver. Well, what's the point?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You might as well pack up your bags and drive.
You don't do it because the cool coffee shop, like the cool coffee shop can't bring you that far out.
Yeah. Right? And it's, you know, we might be generalizing a little bit too much here, but, you know, I do believe that, you know, retail trends really pioneer, you know, a way for us as a company to look at different opportunities, because that ultimately impacts the types of dwellers that are moving into that area. And as we look at the types of dwellers, that's how we program our multifamily, you know, high rise or low rise or townhome densities, really to suit whichever demographic that is.
And so I'm just thinking from a mom and pop investor perspective here, like when you say BD's watching retail is the kind of a strong indicator for where you guys want to be. Can you just talk a little bit about that? Like, what are you guys looking for? And my idea here is just somebody listening at home that's like, I might want to buy an investment. I'm thinking long-term potential. Like, how are you guys going about that?
I would maybe watching is because we certainly don't have like a team of analysts that are at least on the BD Living side that are watching specifically retail trends. But the benefit that we have as a company is we're the largest developers and providers for industrial developments. And as that relates to retail trends and they're seeing shifts happen with their tenants, that some of that information relates back to the living side where we could then interpret that information to make some key decisions. Another note is, again, just, you know, I don't think it's not, you know, rocket science. I think I encourage every time, that's one thing that I love doing when I'm outside of Vancouver, traveling to other cities, or even outside of, you know, visiting different municipalities in Port Moody, or I'm always looking out for what restaurants are moving out here now. What cool bars or hip bars are starting to take form here. Because that's a real signal for me personally to say, hey, but this is quite an interesting community that's going to have some character now. And with character, that's going to have interest and people are going to start talking a little bit more. And I think Brewery Row down at Port Moody is a classic example of that. You know, industrial zoning, industrial sites, you know, back 10 years ago, no one was really talking about Port Moody that it deserved. But now everyone's been talking about, hey, have you been out to Moody Ale or Yellow Dog? And in turn, they're visiting Rocky Point Park, and then they're checking out the neighborhood and they're checking out the schools. Yeah. They're like, oh my God, this is an incredible opportunity to live here. So that's a long-winded answer of that. But we're not studying it specifically, but I'm sure there's, again, going back to smart, important consultants, I'm sure there's someone that analyzes just retail trends like this out there.
And it's interesting, though, that you guys, considering you have the different divisions at BD, you can kind of, one will inform the other. And obviously that makes a lot of sense as well, right? How much control do you have on the commercial leases for
for like your buildings for mixed use? Like, when you're building something, are you securing the whoever the potential commercial tenant is going to be early on in the project? Or it must vary from project to project, I guess.
Absolutely. So in a case like Station Square, where it was jointly, it was a joint development with Anthem Properties.
Right.
And we believe that it was a huge success from all fronts, in terms of residential sales, in terms of the community that we created there. One key strategy there was to lease out the commercial spaces ahead of time and identify key tenants that would add significant value to that neighborhood. So WeWork, as an example, in the commercial office retail space, is a tenant that we have put in place there. Cactus Club and Earls are there sharing a wall, which is a first they've ever done as well. So by identifying these key tenants indirectly or directly, it provided a benefit to the residences above and sure. the whole metro town community. So at times where possible, I think BD's absolutely strategically, we try our best to curate the best tenants for that use, for that location. Other opportunities where it's for sale, we try to manage that process closely with our partners that we have, the listing agents, to make sure that it's not going to be a detriment to the building or the residences above. But overall, I think commercial mixed-use retail spaces right now is probably one of the hottest asset classes
right.
in our industry right now.
Right. And we know we don't have you too much longer here, Sonny. So a couple quick, maybe final questions here. Do you have a favorite investment that you've ever made personally?
In real estate or outside?
Maybe both.
Ooh, that's a tough question. I would say if I could tell, again, anyone or myself, the best investment for myself is always to travel. It's to get outside of Vancouver. Some people see it as, you don't have something tangible, so they don't really see it as an investment. But I've learned always, every time I come back home, I've learned something else or something.
Totally. I actually love this idea with the idea of perspective, right? Like the gaining perspective by going somewhere else on Vancouver, and especially in this industry, it's like, I mean, it's... For anyone in any industry, perspective is important, but it sounds like that Singapore trip was important, North Korea was important. It sounds like you've a lot of your travels have informed the way you approach things, which is kind of interesting for sure. You might have more of a
Well, yeah, I was going to say that the other one, a piece of advice for smart driven millennials that want to get into our industry.
Advice number one would be patient. I think especially a lot of the millennials or even, including some of my colleagues around my age right now, everyone's equally, in fact, more intelligent than ever before. We got smart kids coming through the system.
I feel like the talent pool is impressive. Yeah.
I, for one, would have never passed through or at least made it through solder if, I had the same requirements or the expectations. But, with that level of intelligence comes sometimes impatience. So a lot of, there's a level of entitlement that comes through with that as well in this new age. And everyone wants a promotion within a year. Everyone wants to move on to a different job because they're bored of it. My advice would be stay patient. And there's a real, I truly believe in the topic of mastery. Even if it's one field or one topic, it takes 10,000 hours to truly master and be professional. And I think that's one thing that, as an industry, we do have a limited labor pool. And to really be professionals in our space takes a lot of time and effort. So I think the advice will be stay patient, stay focused, persistent. And, I think there's any opportunity in the world for them, especially in our space, if they do that.
And earn it.
Yes. Yeah.
And maybe just we've got the five wire, five.
Yeah, but
questions.
Wait a second. Before we get to the five wire, because my question here is just what's your take? Or, you talk to a lot of smart people, a lot of consultants. You're a really bright guy. 2020, what does it look like?
2020. I think on the resale side, I was just at a NAIOP breakfast this morning with a deputy economist there, and I share a lot of his sentiments. The resale sales activity is strong. It's stronger than it was last year. Prices are, you know, drastically coming off or coming on or growing. I think we're going to see a buoyant market where you're going to see stronger sales activity come in the spring market for resales. I think pre-sales, year over year, we've drastically reduced number of supply for pre-sale launches. So naturally, I believe there's going to be time and place where as resale inventory diminishes, there's not going to be as much deals out there for that. A lot of the focus is going to shift back to the pre-sale side where at that point in time, incentives won't be as available or on the table. Sales will start tracking higher. So 2020, I think, you know, relatively buoyant market, both for resale and pre-sales. But on the pre-sale side, the longer outlook is, you know, based on how few projects or supply is coming online at the rate that demand should be absorbing right now, I think, you know, we should see a pretty healthy pre-sale market come back around, you know, not too far in the distant in our future.
Are prices higher in July of 2020 than they are today?
Yes. Based on the sales volume and the sales activity that's taking place on the resale side right now, mm-hmm. I believe prices will have to be moderately, you know, increased or at least, you know, stable. It's definitely not going backwards than it was in 2018.
All right.
Well, and yeah, so quickly, the five wire, five quick questions about Vancouver. Homer, don't hurt him.
Please, Homer.
Number one, favorite neighborhood in Vancouver?
Fairview Slopes.
Favorite bar or restaurant?
Ann and Chi.
Oh, I love that one. Ooh. That's a good one. What is one book that you'd recommend anyone listening?
The Alchemist.
Wow, that's our second time getting The Alchemist.
The Alchemist?
Yeah.
No, I have not read it. Yeah, I heard The Optimist there.
The Alchemist.
I was like, I haven't even heard of that book.
You're like, I heard On the Toad. What is one piece of advice that you'd give your 18-year-old self?
Listen more.
Interesting. Listen more. Last question. Yeah. Ooh, there you go. What is something you have bought in the last year or two for under $1,000 that has changed your life?
I mean, literally speaking, it would be my own ring purchase. I just got married last month, so that's literally changed my life.
Congrats.
Nice.
Under $1,000.
Yeah, hey, man, you got the market's tough out there. The market's tough.
Well, thanks so much for your time, Sonny, and that was really good. Homer time. Yeah. How can people find out more about you and Beattie?
You could reach out directly through my handle, I guess.
Oh,
it's Homer time. Nice. On the old IG. Or, my name's unique enough to find online on the interweb. So, yeah, sonny.hom. Or,
perfect.
Yeah,
sonny. And is it beattie.com?
It's beattie.ca. So sunny.hom@beattie.ca for any questions or reach outs. Yeah.
Right on. Well, thanks so much for your time. That was great.
Thank you.
So there you have it, folks. Our discussion with Sunny Hom, Director of Marketing and Strategy at Beattie. And that one did not disappoint.
Nearly a director of a film, a producer.
Yeah, I think so. I said director, but co-producer.
Yes.
Interesting
guy all around.
Interesting, very interesting guy. He seems to have a larger purpose. I like this bringing down borders things and connecting on a human level.
We've talked about the importance of travel for understanding like local markets and by kind of going abroad, right? I mean, we've kind of covered that on the show.
Yeah, for sure.
But I like Sunny. I always get more perspective when I leave the city. First of all, it makes me appreciate Vancouver more, but it also gives me insight into either the direction that we're heading or the direction, you know, it doesn't take long traveling elsewhere to learn how cities are navigating issues with affordability or with transportation.
Totally.
And the list goes on, right? Public spaces, public art, everything, right?
It's that's a very good point. But we do have a book to give away before we go. So this is Larry Beasley's signed copy of Vancouverism.
Yes.
Now, the way you enter into this contest, of course, is you go to Google, you write Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. On the right-hand side, there's a business profile. You hit review, you write a review.
Yes.
You get entered into the draw. We have a winner this week. Secret?
The winner is Graham Brewster.
Oh, congratulations, Graham.
Congrats, Graham.
He writes, awesome guests and always an entertaining listen. I appreciate the varied content and speakers bringing different points of view and insights together to help understand what is going on in the market as much as anyone can. Started listening a year ago, now caught up on all and look forward to the next ones coming out.
How do you think that went, Secret?
those commas are a breath, I think, eh? He was trying to get through it so quick.
Congratulations, Graham. Get in touch. We got a signed copy for you here. What else do we got before we go? There's a couple more things.
Yes.
One, December 11th, 7 p.m.
Cannot wait.
Amazing guest. It's kind of an ask me anything, but we'll come
Vancouver
up with a
Vancouver Real Estate
well.
Live. It's just hanging out. It's hanging out on YouTube. We're live. You can be wherever you want to be. Get in touch if you have questions in advance. You can also ask questions in real time. And there's some great guests.
Last time we started it by seeing who was looking at their phone the most.
Right. And I've got my phone time down about an hour since then.
Really?
A day. Yeah, I'm down to about 4 hours a day now.
Well, anyway, it was a good time. This one's going to be excellent. So that, and we also got our website.
We can't forget
VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com for all things real estate, where we have resources like private client services.
And Matt, if you are not using PCS, you are standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor level information at your fingertips. It's free. It's available on our website. And really, you got to be using PCS. It's the best.
If you're not using PCS, you're doing it wrong. We also got the LiveWire. That's our weekly email. We're sending out stats. We're sending out deals of the month.
Yep.
Sometimes when we see a good pre-sale, we'll send that out. I mean, it's a list you want to be on.
You shouldn't be on it.
That's absolutely the case. If you want to talk about that or anything else real estate related, give me a call at 778-847-2854 or Matt at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or Adam at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
We also got that secret line.
info@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Speaking of old rap, remember when Secret got that Ice-T album and titled it I-C-E-T-E-A?
That was a cassette.
Yeah. That was a cassette, yeah.
Yeah. True story.
True story.
All right, take care, guys.
From the true gangster himself, Nestie.
Have a good week.
2,000 Spaces for Radio.
Subscribe today.
Hey everyone, pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
This podcast is sponsored by Common Ground Consulting.
Are you developing in the Lower Mainland? Common Ground Consulting is a development management and consulting company with experience in single family, townhouses, multifamily, and commercial developments.
What I love about Common Ground, Adam, is they manage the whole development process, from due diligence and feasibility reports for initial purchase of land to completing rezoning, development permits, and building permits.
They streamline the whole process with strong relationships with sub-consultants and municipalities and a deep understanding of all city requirements.
Common Ground Consulting. Feasibility and efficiency prioritized every step of the way.
Learn more at commonground-consulting.com or 604-807-6419.
We are also sponsored by Oakwin Realty. This is our real estate brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are in the industry, a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, new culture, new energy, new resources, head over to oakwin.com/join, type in VRP 2020. That's oakwin.com/join.
type in VRP 2020. Not only do you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, the bigwigs over at Oakwin, you get a huge incentive for first going to oakwin.com/join, typing in VRP 2020.